fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, April 6th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Hello, cowboy. What's your name?
Why, I'm your host, ma'am. That savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. We're back with my guest, that brilliant erotic author and gal about town, Shauna Germain. This is part two of our chat in the podcast series called The Erotic Mind. As you know, we've been chatting with erotic artists of every stripe in the hopes of uncovering something of the creative process involved in this specialized art form. If you somehow missed part one of this perceptive and delightful discussion, look for last week's podcast number 111 on Dr. Dick's podcast page at the top of drdicksexadvice.com, or use the search function. Just type in podcast 111, and don't forget to include the pound sign. I'm happy to report that Shauna will share with us another succulent morsel of her own erotica. Today's podcast sponsor is Hot Movies for Her. Say, gals, are you sick and tired of being left out of the porn market? I should think so. If there's anything that this Erotic Mind podcast series is telling us, it's that women love porn too, but not just any old smut. That's why the good people at HotMovies.com created the ultimate porn site for women, Hot Movies for Her. It's the answer to all your dirty prayers. The plucky women spearheading this site have picked through the largest online adult library to find the best movies for you. You want straight, lesbian, bisexual, gay, or tranny porn? Hot Movies for Her has it all. Choose your porn preferences from one of their specialized theaters, or browse their full collection in the main theater. Watch videos online discreetly with no strings attached, no monthly or recurring charges, just pay for what you want to see. And here's a tip, you can even see all the hot, sexy movies I directed and produced by using the Hot Movies for Her search function. Just type in Daddy-O. That's Daddy, D-A-D-D-Y, and O, like O-O-H-H-H. I know you're going to love them. But there's more. You'll be able to enjoy their free blog full of movie reviews, sex tips, erotic stories, interviews, and industry guest columnists. Look for their swell I Heart Girl Porn banner in the sidebar of my site.
So in conclusion, let me reiterate that there are no rules, that each patient is a supreme individual endowed with those qualities that distinguish the human being from the slime from which he emerged.
I couldn't have said that better myself. Okay, on with the show. Hey, Shauna, thank you for joining us again. It's so good to have you. I'd like to pick up and get right back on this because we ran out of time last week.
And I talk a lot.
No, it was me. You're doing fine, Oklahoma. On the other hand, I would like to bring our attention back to the whole notion of erotic art and how it's difficult to really put one's finger on what erotic art means. And the reason for that is that both what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and culture. For example, the depiction of a phallus in some cultures is not erotic at all, but merely a common symbol of potency and fertility. And the same is true with words. Wouldn't you agree?
I would, absolutely. And I've noticed a change in sort of what is considered erotic, even in the years that I've been doing it. Uh-huh. And I think one of the things that happens is, you know, the what is erotic is so, first of all, it's so personal. It's so different for everyone. You know, what turns us on, what makes us lustful, you know, it's all over the board. And it could be anything from, you know, a ring to someone's wrists to the way someone walks to, you know, anything.
Yes.
And so I think that lust is both universal and timeless. How we describe it, of course, changes. I mean, when you go back and read something from, say, Sappho forever and ever ago, we still read it and we see it as lust, but we maybe don't have the same sort of visceral reaction right. that we would to something, which today I think is a lot less, we tend to be a little less classy. Mm-hmm. Even if we are classy, we're less classy. I mean,
I know.
Erotic has an edge now.
Yeah, it's not so florid.
Yes, you're very, yes, we use a lot less euphemisms, which I have to think is probably a good thing. Although I'm sure we'll go back to it at some point where everything will be flower. And
maybe. Well, one could imagine, you know, that there would be a pendulum swing from something so overt and so in your face and so blatant and so obvious to something a little bit more alluring and seductive and perhaps, who knows?
You never know.
Obviously, some words are more erotically charged than others, but even that is culturally and historically determined. I suspect you would agree with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and not just culturally and historically, but, I mean, the difference between what I can say at a reading here in Portland versus what I can say, you know, two towns over is dramatic. I mean, and I often sort of, when I do readings, I often warm my audience up by just standing up there and swearing. Either sounding like George Carlin or sounding like I have, you know, some sort of syndrome. But a lot of it is to really just get people used. And I teach classes on how to write as well as on how to write erotica. Specifically, you know, for me, the writer's job is to say what we can't say, right? So, you know, part of that is using the words that we can't use and taking them out of the closet and taking them out of wherever they've been hidden and not taking away, I don't want to sterilize them, right? Because part of the reason that they're erotic is because they have this sort of dirty thing going on. So you don't want to sterilize them, but you want people to get their hands dirty. And so, I tend to stand up there and just say six or seven words that usually at least one will elicit some sort of wonderful gasp.
What is a nice girl like that talking like that?
Absolutely.
She's so pretty, but what a potty mouth.
Oh my God, I hear that all the time. Normal. I hear that a lot too.
I love it. So, is writing for a female audience different than writing for a male audience, or even is there a difference in your point of view?
I think it's hard to say. My readers definitely come from all over the board. Certain things are geared towards certain readers, and so I do know that we were just talking about last time male fiction. The majority of people who read that seems to be women who are reading gay erotic fiction. It's a huge women's thing. So it's funny that my heterosexual stuff, my BDSM stuff, all my edgy stuff, I don't have any idea what gender's reading it. But I do know that most of the people who are reading my gay erotica are women. Uh-huh. So that's the only market that I can pinpoint as saying is pretty heavy on the female readership. But it isn't something I think about when I'm writing. Mm-hmm. When I write, I pay total tribute to the story and the characters. I don't care who's reading it. I do, and I care what the reaction is, but not really. If I can be true and loyal to the story that I need to tell and the characters, then I feel like I've done my job. And the rest of it is just marketing and consumerism and you know, all of those other things that come to me after the creative process.
Right. Care to share with us another snippet of your work?
Sure, of course. I'd love to. I'm going to read a piece. One of the things that I love about doing readings also is the chance to sort of break expectations. And so I love to stand up and read from the point of view of, say, a male or a point of view of someone who's obviously not who I am. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that happens that I love, too, is that a lot of stories people can't tell. And so this is a story that I often get, like, when did this happen to you? Which I just really love because, of course, it didn't happen. It's fiction. But so I'm going to read this piece, and it's called Native Tongue. It was in Best Lesbian Erotica 2008. And this is about a third of the way through the story. After we stuff ourselves silly, feeding each other bits of seafood and slices of fruit, we go down to the beach. Margaret shimmies out of her sundress, and for a few seconds, I open my mouth to tell her it's not a nude beach, which is a silly instinct, considering. And it doesn't matter anyway, because she's wearing a tiny bikini under the dress. Dark blue, only slightly darker than the ocean, and the same color as her eyes, It covers her small round breasts in two triangles. Her nipples point in the triangle's direct center, and I want to drag my tongue across the fabric like a cat. She takes my hand and tugs me toward the ocean. I drop my sarong to the ground on the way. We walk through the waves to the point where the water evens out. It's nearly to our chins, but so calm we can touch the sand at the bottom on our tiptoes and don't get knocked over. Her sigh as she leans back into the water is one I recognize. It's a sigh of pleasure. I join her as we lean back and float, our faces to the sky. There's no sound but the surf, and far off, the chatter of birds or people. It's hard to tell which is which, and so I tell myself they are birds. Floating like this, I wonder how this can be. So many ways to love, and how I'm thankful there are no words to describe this kind of love or that one. It isn't as though I don't love Helen. I do. It's just that there are too many words now. In the beginning, the words were stones we dropped in the water to walk on, to go the same places together. Now the words are stones that we carry in our fists, our arms always drawn back, ready to fling. Margaret's hand finds mine beneath the water, and I curl my fingers over hers. Already our skin is sea-sucked and wrinkled. Even so, I swear she's the softest thing I've ever felt. I slide my hand up her arm, pull her closer. She sighs and grabs my belly. The water pulls us together, pulls us apart, and still her lips find mine. Her silent tongue enters my mouth, touches all the places where we make words and soothes them as easily as the sea.
Nice.
I love the way you say that. I'm just going to read to you all day so I can hear you say that.
Yikes. I swear, doing this series, I'm becoming a lesbian. It's the hottest stuff. I swear, it's the hottest stuff. People read to me. I mean, and everybody's reading me lesbian stuff, and I want them to stop.
I have to say that actually two of my very best friends came to this, who are a couple, and after the reading, I read this piece, and after the reading, he came up to me and he said, I have to admit that halfway through that, I forgot that I was no longer a heterosexual male, which I consider to be like the biggest compliment.
It's true. It is the best stuff. I swear. It's so cool. Goodness. So listen, the distinction is often made between erotic art and erotica on the one hand and pornography on the other. All depict or describe the body, sensuality, sexuality, even lovemaking, but there is a fundamental difference between the two forms of expression. Do you agree with that, first of all? And if so, where does the difference lie for you?
That's a really great question, and I think...
Of course it is. I thought it up in my own head.
You know, it's funny because the most common question that I get from people who sort of say they appreciate my writing skills are, when are you going to move into something else? And they say that as though, I don't think they're trying to sort of be negative, but they say that as though either the erotica is not good enough or, you know, I'm wasting my talent or I should be, you know, I'm not sure exactly what they... Yeah, which I'm, of course, never going to do.
Yeah,
happily. And so I think that in other people's minds, there is a real distinction. And I think that they are lumping erotica and porn sort of together.
Yes.
So I think that happens a lot. I have an issue with sort of this hierarchical scale where porn's at the bottom and erotica's sort of at the top, and anything that sucks is porn. And because, you know, porn rocks. I mean, who's not watching porn? You know, and not all porn rocks, of course. But you know, even like my erotica runs the gamut from this very literary, sensual, poetic sort of thing to, you know, getting fucked. And there's and my goal is to still have the same amount of talent and skill and quality. It's just a different section of the edge of the knife, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, it's, and so for me, it's not, I know a lot of people, and I think that I originally started out looking at it as very much this hierarchy of, you know, porn doesn't have a story and, you know, or an erotica does, or porn doesn't have quality and erotica does. And I don't believe that anymore.
Yeah.
I think for me, the definition has more to do with how in your face it is and less to do with quality. But I think I'm probably very much on the outskirts with that belief. I think most people would still define porn as sort of being at the bottom, yeah. And then the sort of level of quality rising as you move into something that's considered erotica.
It's funny that among the authors that I'm talking to, many of them don't make that distinction at all, and it's sex writing is sex writing is sex writing, and you know, some is pornographic and you know, or more overt, and other stuff is more literary, and even the artists are, you know, it's all sexual stuff, you know, sometimes it's you know, a pretty picture, and sometimes it's a graphic depiction on video. But it's all about sex, and when we start making that hierarchical distinction, you know, somebody's going to pay. Somebody is going to pay, and it generally is porn that gets the short end of the stick, and rightfully so, as you suggest. I mean, there's a lot of shit out there, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, oh God, yeah.
But still, you know, it has, just because it's about sex doesn't make it bad, and I hear from some people who said, oh, you know, I can read erotica, but I would never look at porn. And it's because, you know, erotica has pretty words along with the nasty ones. And, you know, I'm just going, oh, somehow I think you're missing the boat.
You know?
I guess.
I will say that, you know, it's a lot easier to sell erotica.
Yes, it is.
And I do think also that there's a, you know, part of, so much to me of that depiction is a marketing term.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I choose, like, people, you know, there are books on the shelf in the literary section that are just as erotic as my work.
Yeah.
But I choose actually to stay in the erotica field because I think it's really important.
Yeah. As we were saying last week.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very much a choice. And, of course, it helps that they pay better than literary. So that helps with everything.
I'm staying here on a principle.
Don't let you think I'm on my high horse here.
Exactly. Has reading and writing erotica empowered you as a woman or perhaps enriched your life sexually or sensually?
Oh, gosh, I think that's a great question. I think everything I write changes me. And I think one of the things that happens in that is, you know, there are things that we all think that don't turn us on or that we would never be able to write about or, you know, that we don't want to touch or that we don't want to look at. And a lot of times those things are things that we don't want to look at in ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are times when there will be a call for submissions on a certain topic and I'll think, oh, no way am I going to do that. And then I'll do it because I feel like, first of all, I want to explore those parts that I'm not willing to look at, and I want to know why, and I want to discover, because I think one of the things that happens is the more you start looking at sexuality, the more you become engrossed in it, the more you realize that those distinctions of what turns us on and what turns us off and what's good and what bad, they're so external. I mean, we've been taught, like, mm-hmm. you know, I have a real problem with that sort of hands-off sexuality of I have the perfect body and the perfect hair, but God forbid you touch me and mess it up. I mean, that's such a weird thing that we have. And so I think it's one of the things it's done, it's made me really get engrossed and entrenched in that so much is erotic and everything can be erotic if we are willing to look at it and willing to sort of change our viewpoint from this sort of good, bad, mind, not mind, touch, don't touch, into this sort of, you know, lustful attitude toward life in general. And I think being in the erotica world, especially with the people, I mean, the erotic writers, they're just the most amazing, open-minded, talented people that I've ever, ever met. And I just really love being immersed in them.
I hear that again. From just about everybody that I talk to, you are wonderfully a wonderfully supportive community for one another, and I think it's absolutely marvelous. Do you suppose that reading good erotica can provide a person an expanded vocabulary for communicating about one's sexual desires?
I would hope so. I mean, I've had people who, I think it does a couple of things, and I think different erotica does different things. And the experience that I get most often from readers, and I think this is because it's sort of my goal as a writer, people come to me and say, I read your story, it turned me on, and it made me cry, and I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
And I hear this a lot, that I think somehow we've disconnected our desire and our sexuality from our emotions. Mm-hmm. So they don't, I mean, except for that sort of big love has to go with sex thing, which I also have issues with, but that's another topic for another day. So my goal is like, you know, sex is the time when we are most human, other than probably death. Mm-hmm. So I want to crack that open and say, why do we make the decisions that we do? Why do we expose ourselves or not, literally and figuratively? What is this thing that brings two or more people together at the same time with all of our defenses down, possibly, hopefully? And so, you know, for me, my goal is not just to arouse people's body, but to arouse their mind. And let's start thinking about what sexuality means in a scale that's beyond sort of, I have this physical response to this word. You know, I have this emotional, physical, intellectual response to this, whatever's happening around me. Mm-hmm. I think all different, you know, if nothing else, somebody's going to pick it up and say, oh my God, I didn't know you could even do that. And they're going to have that twinge in their body that says, oh, I want that, you know. And so I think if nothing else, they're going to get that twinge that makes them go, oh, fuck, I want that.
I use erotica in my therapy practice, and I encourage people who are having difficulty talking about sex or experiencing sex or who are sexually repressed to talk to their partners, and instead of talking to them, read erotica out loud. And it's a task for them because, you know, erotica is full of words that they are prohibited from saying.
Absolutely.
But if they're reading somebody else's words, you know, it's easier for them to overcome this disability of theirs, and then before you know it, they can hear themselves saying fuck and piss and cunt and whatnot, and before you know it, then they can begin to integrate those words, and they're just words. They really are just words. They're not going to bite necessarily, and begin to integrate those words into their day-to-day expressions, or at least talking in the privacy of their boudoir with their lover.
Yeah, or even just allowing it in their brain.
Yes.
I think that's the first stop, is I'm not even allowed to think that word, or I'm not allowed to that desire, and that's the biggest, you know, wall that you're breaking down with that kind of process.
As an author, I know that you that you write lots of other stuff besides the stuff that might commonly be thought as erotic. What makes your erotic stuff different from your other work, besides the obvious, if anything?
I would say nothing.
In fact,
often when I turn in erotica, an editor will come back to me and say, this is a great, great story, but can we have some more sex? And I would say, just for me, the only difference is the explicitness of sex. I mean, even in my sci-fi and my horror, I'm writing about sexuality, I'm writing about gender, I'm writing about subversiveness, and that's in all, you know, our secret desires, all of those things are in all of my work. Mm-hmm. Because that's, like I said, sex and death, I'm interested in those things, the body, what makes us tick, what makes us stop, what makes us move, how does the body and the mind integrate, all of the same topics, except for, you know, there's just a little bit more sex on the page. I really think that that's the main difference between the things and the market.
Is it easy for you to sex up something, you know, or sex down something?
It's easier for me to sex down something than sex up. And part of the reason for that is because, for me, the sex has to be part of the character. It can't be this gratuitous thing. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that happens is I'm really interested in writing about characters who maybe aren't quite yet in touch with their sexuality. Like, how do you come to that point?
Yeah.
How do you And so they're not using words that are sexy because they're a little hesitant and they're not really asking for what they want. And so how do you make that sexy when the character themselves is a little uncertain and a little concerned? And so for me, that's often my dilemma, is how do I make this sexy while without sort of going beyond what the character would actually do or say?
Mm-hmm. Today, erotic artists abound, and there are an abundance of amazingly good erotic writers, although in some circles this genre is still not accepted as mainstream. I know we've touched on this before, but has this been your experience as well?
Yeah, there's some amazing, amazing erotica writers out there, and people who are doing it cross-genre and people who are just doing, breaking open to all kinds of, I mean, it's really amazing to look at the work that's happening, the diversity of it. And I think if you look at, say, Best American Erotica over the years, you can see how, you know, the very first books were very, like, similar. There a lot of sort of heterosexual vanilla stories about two people sort of exploring whatever. Mm-hmm. And as the years go on, I mean, this year there's gender bending and there's women who pack and there's boys with an eye. And, I mean, there's just this great sort of, you know, the internet has changed how we look at sexuality. And so there's stories about, you know, texting or Skyping or, you know, role playing online. And so I think
thanks to you.
No, that was mine. But, you know, there's this whole great thing that's happening where the mains, you know, and I think it's both good and bad, and here's why. Those of us who are in the erotica field are loving this stuff, this breakout stuff. But somebody who's never read erotica, who picks up Best Erotica 2009, they're going to get an eye-opener. And so, you know, so when people come to me and say, I've never read erotica, what do you recommend? I say, you know, Best American Erotica from the year 2000, because that to me is a place to start for them, and then hopefully they're going to progress, because the new books are amazing and incredible and wonderful, but they're definitely pushing boundaries that some people don't even know are there yet. So it's this really interesting thing happening.
Have you ever received criticism for writing erotica by other authors or artists?
Yeah, I have. I think, again, it's that idea that I'm somehow wasting my talent, which I respect that opinion. I don't buy it. And I think I try to explain without sort of being, you know, sort of jerky about it, that this is my choice. This is where I want to be. I would say more so I get positive stuff. People are just really supportive. They're really, I love to hear from writers or readers who say, God, that was me. I know that feeling. I've been in that experience. Or, you know, that was the most, you know, I love to hear from people that where you touch them and it somehow relates to their lives. And, you know, like we were talking last time with the cancer story that I was reading and how it relates to people who've been through that experience.
Yes.
I mean, to have people come to me and say, God, I didn't know anybody else felt like that. Makes me feel like I'm doing my job.
That's true. Is it possible for you as an erotic author to eroticize something that you personally don't find sexy? Again, we touched on this before, but I thought I might ask for an elaboration.
Yeah, you know, I think probably when I started, I probably would have said no way. You know, that I couldn't do it. And now I think about all the things I've written about, and I think, again, it's really, if I don't need to find it sexy, if my character finds it sexy, because then I can say, well, what does she like about it? What turns her on? Mm-hmm. And so I can, and I can, it opens my doors because I can say, oh, well, yeah, I could see that. Sexy, okay. Mm-hmm. And so it does this dual thing where, you know, sort of together the character and I can explore that, whatever that fetish is or whatever that interest is, and start saying, oh, hey, there is sexuality there, and I understand it. And these are the things that that really turns her on about it.
Who are your inspirations and your sexual heroes? They might be one and the same, but ask them separately.
Well, I have sort of a couple of groups, I would say. Like, there are women like Susie Bright, of course, who sort of opened that door for me, and I sort of will say that I grew up with her erotica-wise, even though I mean that not age-wise, but sort of in the last experience. And then I have this really wonderful group of peer writers. Jeremy, that we talked about, is one of them. Donna George Story, Allison Tyler, of course, Rachel Kramer Bussell, like all these people who are sort of my age and my experience and who are going through this stage together and doing, I think they're just doing wonderful, amazing, incredible work. And they're very supportive of the community as a whole. And I just love that. And then there are authors that are outside the sort of erotica world for whatever reason that really inspire me. And there's far too many of those to name. But one of them is, I would say one of my other heroes in that Susie Bright sort of category is Bill Noble, who was the editor. He's the editor of Clean Sheets, and he's the one who accepted my very first story and sort of got me started on the right foot, so to speak. And so I'm actually hoping for like a sixth level floor overlooking the sticks, you know, little window office. but yeah, I mean, I just, people just, I really, I pay homage to so many people who inspire me all the time and support me and you know, raise me up to their level. And I'm so appreciative for anybody and everyone who's reached down to me and said, come up here and do this with us.
Yes, it's amazing. And I've had the pleasure of knowing and interviewing several of the people that you've mentioned, and I'm enormously grateful to, you know, to be welcomed as a peer by, even though I couldn't do what y'all do, and but I'm so happy that you allow me to, you know, kind of peek into your world. It's and bring my audience with me.
Well, it's you know, I actually teach a few classes, and one of the things I go through is the writer's mind, which that I then say, this is the scariest part of this class.
So it's so
anybody
messy.
Who wants to look in my mind is welcome to it, but it's pretty dark there.
What does the future hold for you in your work?
Whew, well, I wish I knew.
Well, you're going to the UK.
I'm going to the UK, so I'll be spending 6 months on an island in Scotland, which is partially, you know, thanks to another erotica writer friend that I know, so I'm very grateful for that.
Wow.
And I would say probably, you know, I sort of describe myself as a poet by nature, a short story writer sort of by the skin of my teeth, and a novelist in training. Mm-hmm. And I think that's still very true. Poetry is my first love. I love writing fiction, but it's a different process. But I'm also really interested in pushing myself a little bit. And, you know, can I become a marathon runner from starting as a sprinter? And, mm-hmm. and how does that process work?
Yes.
So I have a feeling that novels are sort of something that I'll be growing into.
Uh-huh.
So more poetry, more short stories, hopefully sort of wrangling the novel down and whatever I need to do to get it to submit.
Good, good, good. Before we conclude, can you give us your website address and walk us around a bit?
Oh, sure. So and I'm actually, I have to say that my website is in revamp, so by the time people hear this, it might be a whole new look, which I've actually got on my laptop and I'm just look at every day because it's just so beautiful. They just did a really wonderful job. But my website is shaunagermain.com. And right now it's really a compilation of short fiction, books that I'm included in, sort of news and awards about what's going on, my blog, which I update almost daily. And a lot of it is really behind the scenes. I think writing is, and part of this comes from being a writing teacher, but I think writing is this sort of mysterious process that people think they can't understand, or that you have to be a certain way or live a certain lifestyle, and it's really not. And so I try to break that apart and give people kind of an idea of how you can do it, how you can go about it, how you can start it, or at least how I do it and how I go about it. And maybe that will help them do the same thing if it's something they're interested in.
Can we buy your work through your site?
You can through, like, say, Amazon, for example. But I always recommend, if you're going to buy work, buying it through the editor's site, because they
get a little bit
of extra money.
So I'm promoting, yeah. You know, Cleus and whatnot.
Absolutely.
It's really important.
Absolutely.
Besides, they send me books. And
well, there
I like
you go.
For that. Wonderful. I am so grateful that you've taken so much of your precious time to spend with us.
I could have been
for the
sexual athlete while I was here.
You can pretend.
I don't think you want me to breathe that loudly.
Thank you again. I'm overwhelmed. And until we meet again, we'll be seeing each other in cyberspace, yes?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast. I absolutely loved it.
Thanks, Shauna. What a fantastic show, huh? I loves me some Shauna Germain. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Hot Movies for Her. All you porn-loving gals out there, listen up. The days of wading through a lot of really crummy male-oriented smut just to find the good stuff, the stuff that you're craving to see, are finally over. Now, there's Hot Movies for Her, your very own place for the best porn there is.
Listen, mister, I don't go for this sort of thing.
No, check it out. See the difference female-oriented porn makes. And don't forget that Hot Movies for Her is where all the cool porn chicks hang out. Remember, there's never a membership fee or reoccurring charges. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. And here's a tip. You get 10 free minutes just for signing up. Why, you can't beat that with a stick. Look for their swell I Heart Girl Porn banner in the sidebar of my site.
I know a lot of the other girls are turned on by these sort of kinky phone calls, but I really couldn't care less.
Well, you're going to love this bit of news then. I want to tell you all about another series of podcast interviews I'm doing called Sex Education. We will be investigating the fetish and kink world and discussing topics like BDSM, power play, swinging, polyamory, and the like, with prominent practitioners and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles. This new series started back in February, and it's on Wednesdays, while my regular podcasts like this one remain on Mondays. Be sure to look for all my podcasts on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. And when you do, feel free to leave a comment. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? That's even better. Over and out.